Therapy Notes is the highest rated EHR, practice management, and billing software for mental health professionals. Its all-in-one platform is designed to streamline all aspects of your practice, from connecting with clients via secure messages to scheduling, notes, billing, and more. You can trust Therapy Notes has you covered. And one of the best parts? 24/7 customer service with a live person. It's beyond easy to get help over the phone or by email at any time of day from their knowledgeable and friendly representatives. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
Therapists, ready to stop just listening and start doing? I offer several ways to work with me and accelerate your trauma expertise. You can join my Trauma Therapist Network membership community for ongoing support, book a one-on-one clinical consultation with me for personalized guidance, or buy my course for clinicians on supporting survivors of sexual trauma, and check out the retreats coming up in 2026. All that info and more is on the For Therapists page of Trauma Therapist Network, and you can find a link in the show notes.
Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 532.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat, and hello from where I am, which is a very hot place where I am working hard on the book that I've been telling everybody that I'm writing, beginning to make some good progress, and I'm so happy about that. Sometimes you just have to get away from your normal life to have that headspace to be able to do that. This week's episode is about, you know, trauma resolution and nervous system regulation are hot topics. We see all over social media, but there's another piece that's often left out of the discussion. This week, my guest is my colleague and friend, Tracy Jarvis, who is a psychotherapist with a background in neuroscience, who is the co-founder and one of the core faculty of Interoception International, a training institute integrating interoception research with the clinical application of psychotherapy. In our conversation, Tracy explores the complex world of interoception, its role in trauma recovery, and its implications for clinicians. Tracy explains the meaning of the word interoception and how it's distinct from somatics, and how clinicians can use nuanced approaches to help clients understand and work with internal sensations. Discover how understanding internal sensing can transform therapeutic approaches and improve emotional regulation. Tracy Jarvis, MSc, is a licensed psychotherapist, international trainer, and consultant with over 20 years of experience in psychology and mental health. Specializing in neuroscience and trauma, Tracy combines a rigorous academic foundation with over 25 years of yoga and movement practice, bringing a deeply embodied and neurobiological perspective to her clinical and teaching work. Before co-founding Interoception International, she was the founder and CEO of PESI UK, previously Psychotherapy Excellence, a not-for-profit organization and the largest clinical content provider in the UK and Europe. Additionally, Tracy is a former trainer with the Sensory Motor Psychotherapy Institute, and she has a specialist private practice focusing on PTSD, complex trauma, and other trauma-related issues and diagnoses. She teaches, advises, and consults on trauma and clinical strategy for various organizations worldwide, as well as for TV and film, emphasizing the importance of a bidirectional approach to treating psychological trauma. So we're going to really dive into the topic of interoception. It's very important for anyone who's doing somatic work and anyone who's not doing somatic work to understand interoception. So let's dive right into my conversation with Tracy Jarvis.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today I'm so happy to be joined by Tracy Jarvis. Tracy, thank you so much for being my guest on Therapy Chat today.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Laura. Thanks so much for inviting me. So good to be here.
The pleasure's all mine. I'm thrilled to be with you. I've been wanting to interview you on my podcast for a long time. And we met, I think it was almost two years ago now, very randomly in England when we met through Ariel Schwartz. And since then, we've become buddies and good colleagues and gotten to spend a lot more time together. So I'm super thrilled about what you're doing, which is what we're going to talk about. And before we get into it, let's just start off by you letting our audience know a little bit more about your background, who you are, and what you do.
Okay. So I'm a licensed psychotherapist. I'm a trauma specialist, and I see clients in Oxford and England and online globally. I am an international trainer, former trainer for Sensory Motor Psychotherapy Institute, and recently just set up our own training institute, Interception International, which is really focusing, and we're busy building a curriculum on interception-informed therapy. I'm also one of the previous founders and CEOs of one of the PESI companies, and used to work, have my own business. And after saying that I'd never, ever start another company again, I recently started Interception International with my good colleagues and co-founders. So yeah, and that sort of, you know, brings me today where I teach a lot globally and on trauma, complex trauma related to interception and embodiment. And that's what brings us to here now together.
Yes. So, you know, some people may not be familiar with the word interception, but embodiment, everybody's talking about right now, and somatic therapies. And, you know, with you previously being a trainer in a somatic psychotherapy method, will you tell people what are we talking about when we say interception?
So interception is how we sense internally, right? So how do we sense, for example, sensation? And it's not just sensation related to emotion or a trauma response. It's also, how do I sense when I'm hungry? How do I sense when perhaps an organ has a pain or, you know, something's happening? How do I sense my heartbeat? How do I sense what's happening in the body? So there's a lot of research. Actually, there's over 4,500 articles on both the medical side and the psychological side on interception. And yes, I do come from somatic therapy as a, you know, clinician, certified clinician, as well as a trainer, international trainer. And what's the difference? What's the difference between interception and somatics? Somatics has a lot of more movement practices in it. It is of the body too. But when we look to interception and some of the research, interception, 80% of it happens unconsciously.
Yeah.
So even with the most complex clients where there's been a lot of trauma, it's been prolonged, it's been horrific, it's been developmentally timed, for people who can't sense their bodies because for all the right reasons, actually their interceptive processes are happening in any case. And that's 80% unconscious, and roughly about 20% for all of us, we can get a sense of what's happening. So how it differs is that on the interception side, there's a lot of emerging research. And on the somatic side, I'm not saying that there isn't research, but there's less research. And on the interception side, there's research connecting, you know, those unconscious processes signaling in the body to emotional responses through to memory, all the way up to consciousness. So there's like a line in terms of, you know, what we're seeing in the RCTs and the other sort of empirical evidence bases around the impact on certain things and interception.
Even for people who don't really feel what's happening inside, I know I was in that group for a long time before I learned how to tune into what was happening inside. Now I feel so many sensations all the time in my body. It's almost like distracting because like with fibromyalgia, you have these like sensations on the skin or like there's burning or a chill or cold. And it's like, oh, what's going on? So I'm really curious about this because, I mean, in addition to just as a clinician, for my own self, I'm aware that my system is sending me these signals through these sensations. And my mind thinks it's like trying to tell me something, but it feels like it's like an overactive response at the same time, because whatever it's trying to tell me, it's like it's here, then it's here, then it's here, then it's on my side of my leg, then it's on my right big toe. And, you know, it's just like continuously. So what's the role of interoception?
Yeah. So the role, if we look to some of Professor Antonio Damasio's work and others in homeostasis, and the role of interception is really around keeping everything functioning at balance. And again, you know, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a researcher, I'm a clinician, and I work with the clinical application therapeutically. But if we look to interception and its role in, you know, what Professor Damasio says, in keeping everything kind of functioning. So it's like the baseline before the mind, right? It's the mind before the mind. So, and he calls that the proto-self. And we know that in interception and its function in homeostasis, when that gets disrupted at a very kind of core level, for example, from adversity in terms of, you know, adverse childhood experiences and or trauma, because some ACEs aren't traumatic and some are, that can impact that sort of what Damasio calls the proto-self. And then what, you know, what we see or what we see in that theory is that that proto-self baseline homeostasis has implications for, you know, the autobiographical self in terms of Damasio's language, like the self as I am now in terms of my experience and everything that affects that. So that's one of the roles of interception as we understand it today. So it's not just about sensing internally, like in somatics, so where you sense internally. It actually has an incredible biological, physiological, every kind of function that then relates into the interceptive system, which is critically important, for example, even just to staying alive, breathing, heart rate, all that kind of thing.
This is very interesting. So you mentioned that there's a ton of research on what the impact of interception has. Can you talk a little bit about some of those impacts and how they would relate to us as clinicians?
Yeah. So one of the things you were talking earlier about, you know, if it's okay to use your fibromyalgia as an example,
sure.
You were saying lots of different sensations. And what I understood by what you're saying, that then there was some interpretation that was going, you know, with what might that mean? Or where's that coming from? And so in some of the interception research, there's a couple of things that, and again, I'm not the science expert and I'm still learning a lot as we develop our company. But one of the current research questions at the moment, and there's many papers on this, is around kind of, you know, signal noise reduction. So what does that mean? It means that when there's more adversity in the system, there's higher kind of noise or signaling misinterpretation. For example, when I have this feeling or this sensation and that felt sense I'm sort of sensing in that posterior insula, the insula sort of is a brain region, that anterior part of the insula is said, what the research tells us, is said to kind of give that interpretation then on that felt sense. So give you a clinical example. Recently working with a 60-year-old female who was unfortunately sexually abused by her grandfather. And what would happen is that her legs would tense up, right? And I said, you know, what's the first thing that comes to mind as you feel that sensation in your legs, that tension? And she said to me, it's dangerous. Now, tension in the legs can mean a multiplicity of things. It can be like on the other side of that, it could be going for a run and really feeling like your muscles have worked out, or doing yoga Pilates and feeling like, wow, my fascia has stretched a bit, maybe a little bit sort of too much on the one side, and it's okay. But in terms of this specific individual, right, the interpretation of the interceptive experience was as dangerous. So we see that clinically, and I see that clinically in my practice, and I think many clinicians do, is that there is interpretation around the noise of the interceptive sensation or the signal. It also goes more in depth, and I'll say, like, I don't know all the scientific research about the noise signal to noise ratio, but some of the research is sort of like the higher the noise, that when that noise is reduced internally, the symptoms go away. Now, that's really interesting, you know, for substance misuse, other mental health challenges, reducing that signal to noise ratio has a massive impact then on behavior and adaptive strategies that were once, whether it's alcohol or drugs or sex, drugs, and rock and roll, that were once part of a person's life because of the adversity. Now then, reducing some of that signal to noise ratio, then some of those behaviors sort of, you know, moving away, going away. So that's some of the clinical application behind that. And there's a three-dimensional model by Professor Sarah Garfunkel and colleagues. Professor Garfunkel is out of UCL, that's University College London. And again, the research is not totally concrete on this, but when we sort of bring more awareness to the system or reduce some of the signal to noise, we see that three-dimensional model actually get better. And interception accuracy, for example, is when it's an objective measure. So, for example, if I want to measure someone's interceptive accuracy, I might hook them up, not clinically, but, you know, in the hospital, maybe to like a heartbeat detection test. And I might say to them, well, how many times a minute does your heart beat? And they might sense into their body and they might say, well, it beats, you know, 45. But actually what the measure coming out at me beats 65. So there's some sense of inaccuracy around that.
Okay.
When we look to interceptive sensibility, which is someone's belief in their ability to sense sensation, and we know that in trauma survivors, well, you know, the research is a little bit mixed here, we see that interceptive sensibility reduced, right? There's an impairment to them feeling super confident that when I have the sensation in my body, I can feel it. And I feel that that is the sensation I'm feeling. So we see that in terms of dissociation or the numbing or feeling things that maybe aren't there or are there, depending on what's happening with the person. And then in terms of, you know, interceptive awareness, which many people know as somatic awareness, we also see through different adversity and trauma, reduction in the ability to be able to be aware of what's happening inside. And clinically, we do a lot of work in interceptive awareness to really engage those prefrontal cortex areas to be able to sense and be aware of what is happening internally in the body. And so when you look to those kind of three-dimensional model, the awareness, the accuracy and the sensibility, while we can't measure that clinically in clinical practice, because some of those are objective measures, our goal is to try and increase those measures because they are decreased through adversity, trauma, etc. And so, you know, there's a direct correlation between what we see mental health wise and where people are on those sort of measures. And that's important because a lot of the time somatically, we all do somatic or body oriented therapies, but we don't actually have a measure. Not that everything has to be a measure, but it's a great way to, you know, ask the question, which we do need to ask ourselves, is what we're doing working? And sometimes we might not be able to answer that in terms of science because the things that happen, as you and I know, clinically and between people, that it's not going to be in this lifetime that people are going to find the signs that are going to tell us what exactly happened.
Right.
And
some fascinating and surprising things happen, and you don't see those things in the research a lot of times.
Yeah, yeah. And however, these measures give us a little bit of a base as well. And then there's obviously a correlation between those and signal to noise ratio, etc. And what I haven't mentioned that I'll just mention is that when we were talking about that interpretation, then there's this interceptive appraisal, for example, with my client who, you know, the tension in the legs was dangerous. But then there's the reappraisal. So, for example, with a highly dissociative client, but you can't just go into the body. But what you can do is start to kind of work at reappraising sensation so the system doesn't feel so unsafe. Because if you have a fear feeling, for example, hypervigilance, and then you have a thought, a belief, this sensation means danger, you're exacerbating what's there already. There might be hypervigilance coming from, you know, the periaqueductal gray and those midbrain structures. Right. And now you've got an exacerbation because now there's another interpretation of what this might mean. So now you're exacerbating the hyper arousal or the hyper arousal. You can go either way. So with those dissociative clients and clients with a lot of complexity, it's easier to work and safer to work with the interpretation of sensation and get the system into more of a, you know, when I feel this. For example, with a client, the tension in my legs. Actually, you know what? That feels like when I've just been for a run. That's the same sensation. Yeah, it doesn't feel dangerous. You know, funny enough, my heart's not beating right now as fast as it did when we first did the exercise 6 weeks ago. So, you know, that can really help bridge working with the body in terms of, you know, clients who've experienced either a lot of bodily harm or for whatever the reason is, can't quite go into the body because it's not okay to do so. And it can kind of really spin people out of control. So that's clinically how I use it. I use it, you know, it's a bit of top-down work. It's great because we're really understanding what are some of those appraisals. And then I can start to work with the body. And clients are feeling safer to do that. Once we've worked and identified some of those appraisals around sensation.
Thank you for the explanations. And I just want to make sure I'm understanding the distinction you're making there is before going, because the person is dissociated from their body and they're not, it's not what's in there feels so terrifying when they tap into it. That starting off this way, more in the top-down approach, rather than trying to go to the body right away, is gives them the chance to explore kind of more of an expansive perspective about what they're feeling, what they're, you know, even possibilities that they're looking at. Am I understanding correctly?
Yeah, and what the meaning that has been made around the, it's natural to feel fear and being frightened and terror when traumatic experiences, you know, when someone has had, you know, traumatic experiences, totally natural. And it's also natural to appraise an experience. Something happens with so much kind of force. For example, hypothetically, I walk outside my house and I walk into the road and I'm nearly hit by a bus, God forbid. And I think to myself, you know, because I then feel my heart kind of go up. And I think then every time that sort of, you know, feeling comes into my heart, I'm like, I'm going to die. And then, no, I'm not going to die. I nearly died, but I didn't die. But then that belief, every time I feel that sensation, has the kind of associated belief of I'm going to die. So you can understand that, for example, with physical and sexual violence, emotional abuse, coercive control. If we just look more widely, climate change, wars, you know, conflicts around these, you know, experiences that are happening. And then some of those interpretations of the felt sense of the interception. And so, you know, with more dissociative clients, it's easier to work there because obviously the body's the enemy, right? It's not for all clients who have experienced trauma, because we know some of the statistics, right? Only 80% of the world experiences some kind of trauma, but only 20% get a PTSD diagnosis, or some, the figures are somewhere along those lines. So we can really help people who feel that this is not the place to go into the body right now, but it can be, by using more of a, you know, psychoeducational explanation about what's happening. Totally normal to have those appraisals about what's happening in the body. We want to get some kind of reappraisal happening. And once they are feeling comfortable, we can start to kind of tap into the body and tap out, right? Tap in and tap out. And then we can go deeper. A lot of the psychotherapies nowadays, certainly the body psychotherapies, you know, to go to the body, really? We don't have to just go to the body. We can do incredible work in a safe and phase-oriented way by working top-down and then going to the body. And also depending on, you know, the client's sort of system, different phases of working with body, not working with body, doing a bit of this, doing a bit of that, to sort of to help people. Because we must remember that a lot of this disruption in interception awareness, interception sensibility, and interceptive accuracy, one of the core sort of ideas coming out of the research is with regard to emotional dysregulation, right? So when we're improving those three measures, what they're seeing in the research, in some of the research, a lot of the research, is an improved emotional way of regulating the self, which is absolutely critical to just, you know, quality of daily life, just having an okay day for many individuals, that it's smooth and, you know, less bumpy up and down. That's what we want for people, right? We want them to be more emotionally stable, regulated. And when dysregulated, knowing what to do to get back to some of that regulation, if possible, and or give practices that can help with that dysregulation that comes from that misinterpretation of the signal issue.
Therapy Notes is consistently transforming the way therapists manage their practices with continuous updates designed to save money and improve efficiency. Their latest game changer, Therapy Fuel, a powerful and fully integrated suite of AI tools that streamline documentation so you can focus more on your clients. With AI features that help by generating progress notes from summaries or transcriptions, creating contact notes directly from clients' secure messages, and automated summaries of client history forms, Therapy Notes users are already reporting hours of saved time and energy. Some other recent feature improvements include automated recurring client payments, electronic secondary insurance billing, and their constantly expanding library of outcome measures. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
therapists ready to stop just listening and start doing. I offer several ways to work with me and accelerate your trauma expertise. You can join my Trauma Therapist Network membership community for ongoing support, book a one-on-one clinical consultation with me for personalized guidance, or buy my course for clinicians on supporting survivors of sexual trauma, and check out the retreats coming up in 2026. All that info and more is on the For Therapists page of Trauma Therapist Network, and you can find a link in the show notes.
I see. I agree with you, too, that, you know, I mean, I'm actually going to add something, and you didn't explicitly say this, but I've noticed that the whole, I mean, just thinking about even in the past couple of years that I've known you, the whole story about what therapy should feel like and look like and how it should go, sort of like this cultural understanding of what happens in therapy, I feel has really been influenced by social media and this perception that everything is going to be like a really dramatic, body-oriented, like catharsis in every therapy session now. And that's not true.
That's right. That's right. And I think, you know, I'm glad that you mentioned that because, you know, a lot of people nowadays either look to AI or they look to TikTok or they look to Instagram or they look to kind of some form of something with some clinicians who aren't even licensed, maybe some coaches that aren't even licensed.
Or necessarily qualified with what they're sharing about.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And I want to say to myself, like, no, I don't know all the research on interception. So, you know, maybe I've made some mistakes in terms of how I was explaining it, but I know a lot of it as a licensed clinician and I'm knowing more. But what you're saying is true is because the whole kind of trend has been about the body, about the body. And in some ways, I think that's iatrogenic, meaning harm caused by intervention, because there's a large part of the population that does want to heal and that does go to social media or other sort of, you know, outlets for content, which are being sort of the information is incorrect and can lead to them feeling in worse positions. Because what happens if someone can't feel their body because it's numb, or they every time they go towards their body, they get some kind of ab reaction or something else happens. And then they're thinking, oh, well, what's the point? You know, I can't even do this. Well, just notice and sense your breath for sort of, you know, three in-breaths and three out-breaths. Well, actually, with people with, you know, I used to work in inpatient, with CPTSD and kind of on more the complex dissociative side of things, you know, breath, feeling the breath, especially in sexual trauma survivors, is iatrogenic and can cause re-traumatization, because many sexual trauma survivors concentrate on the count of the breath or the breath to get through as an adaptive strategy, whatever and unfortunately happened to them. So, you know, there's a lot of misinformation there, and it's really dependent, and I feel very passionately about this, around having the right strategies in a nuanced way for the client or the person. And it definitely is not all about the body. I've had a lot of success working with the body, and I do, but I've had incredible changes for people, you know, just huge amounts of insight when they recognize or when they've been able to sort of, yeah, this feels like this. Oh, you know, totally shifts their system into another kind of way of being. So I'm so glad you mentioned that, because, you know, there's a lot of misinformation out there. And certainly by people, unfortunately, they try to do good in the world. But it's helpful to be qualified if you're going to be working or putting content out, you know, that can influence people who don't know. You know, that's their life. That's their life.
That's right. And, you know, the creator who puts something out and tells people this is how it is and this is what you should do and I'm going to demonstrate it for you, and then that's what they think needs to happen, is not going to be with you when you start having flashbacks or panic attacks and your system is overwhelmed and you don't know what to do. And it's not blaming anybody for trying to find healing and help where they know to look. And yet I think it's really important. You know, you have so much humility about what you're speaking about, and you continually say that you're not a researcher, but do you have an undergraduate degree in neuroscience?
I have a master's in neuroscience.
Yeah. Okay, then.
Yeah, I don't have a PhD.
You know what you're talking about, though. I'm just saying.
Well, I know a little bit of what I'm talking about, because actually the interception research, it really is so vast, you know, across not just homeostasis, allostasis, signal to noise reduction, different sort of other systems working with the interceptive system, you know, some of the mechanisms of change within interception and how those sort of like pair with like the default mode network and the salience network. And, you know, there's a lot of things happening there. It's complex. But to your point, Laura, like, you know, for people putting out content, I'm big into nuance. Like, I don't know what's going to work for a client. I might have a lot of experience of working with trauma. But to think I know, I don't know what's going to work for someone. It's about really being with that person and them guiding you, exploring and experimenting and seeing like what works for that system.
Yep.
Rather than saying, well, you go do this and do 1, 2, 3, 4 and boop, 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 boop. And it's like, well, hold on a second. What's really healing for someone is traumatic for someone else. And yeah.
Thank you. There's no one size fits all approach. I have, you know, as a person who does post on social media as a way to spread, you know, information about what I'm doing as a business owner, you kind of have to some extent. But I struggle because so much of what we do with clients, there's no formula that you could just make a 1 to 3 to 5 minute video about, and it's going to fit for everyone. And there's so much that is a felt sense experience in the therapeutic process that is a felt sense between the two nervous systems that are involved, or if it's a group or whatever the case may be.
That's right.
And like you said, it's this attunement. How is this landing as you're doing it? You're experientially trying something out and seeing, is this meeting the person where they are? Is this going where they don't want to go, or they're not ready to go, or whatever? And yeah, I agree with you about nuance, and this is really important stuff. So you are training clinicians in your approach. That's part of what you're developing with your organization, right?
Yeah, yeah. So we're just busy building out. Actually, we just launched our first event in February. And
congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, we had like 2,300 people sign up. And
amazing.
It was, you know, started the marketing super late. And, you know, we've got several events coming up. But we're busy building a curriculum at the moment, both for clinicians and then hopefully actually a coaching track, because you can utilize, you know, more of the clinical part and actually impact a lot of people in a great way with the non-clinical part. And there's a robust evidence base behind it, which, you know, doesn't have to be about evidence, but it does give an evidence-informed framework to what's happening around, like we mentioned earlier, like embodiment, right? And it also includes, like in therapy, it can't just be about interception, because interception in the sciences is very specific to what's happening internally. So we are going to be bringing in, and probably through a paper that we will release, proprioception and exteroception. So proprioception and exteroception being, you know, exteroception being about, you know, how we experience the outside world. And then that proprioception, you know, all those with the vestibular system and, you know, how we balance and the internal workings, and how that then integrates in terms of the proprioception with the senses, et cetera. So we'll be bringing in those pieces of research as well, because otherwise an interception-informed model, it can't just be an interception-informed model, because we need different ways of sensing and also, you know, sensing externally, not just internally, to have a therapeutic model, which is exciting.
It is exciting. I'm like very excited, and I feel fortunate to be kind of like watching you birth this. And I know your commitment to the work you do, and your, you know, like you jokingly, kind of jokingly said that you had vowed you wouldn't start another company, but here you are. But, you know, there's something driving you, and you're doing something really important. And I know the colleagues who, at least some of the colleagues who you're involved with as well, are equally committed and deep roots in this type of work. So,
yeah. And I want to share something about that, because actually I've never shared this before, and it's on my website, so this is public, that I had post-traumatic stress disorder for sort of several years, 5 years. But the first thing I noticed when this got triggered out of nowhere, you know, everything sort of coming up from adversity, when I, you know, from the adversity I suffered as a child, I was able to, thankfully, notice a part. And that part was a movement, an interoceptive sense inside my stomach. And so, you know, birthing Interception International speaks to, if I, you know, rewind the clock, it's over 20 years since this happened, since I had a breakdown. And fortunately, just that awareness, that interceptive awareness, I think, is what really helped me. Because I was able to stay with the sense of interception and then start to work with it through body psychotherapy after, you know, the talk therapy didn't work for some time. But I never lost contact with my interception. Mm. And I know for some people, you know, they're numb or they can't sense their body. They're totally dissociated. And of course, I had periods of really bad dissociation, but I could still sense. And so interception is really important to me, because it's kind of, if I go back off like long ago, it's kind of where it all started.
Yeah. You know?
And so I'm deeply curious about the interceptive system for everyone, because it has a lot of interceptive intelligence. Like, we know the words, you know, somatic intelligence, interceptive intelligence. But actually, when I was doing some research, I came across a guy called Walter Cannon. And this guy was around in like the 1930s. And when I was researching, he wrote a book in 1932, which was called, I think it's called The Wisdom of the Body, which I'd never come across before. I thought a lot of the somatic pioneers of our field today had discovered somatic wisdom. But actually, when you look at the research into Walter Cannon and some of the other researchers back then, you find a lot of them talking about this internal wisdom. And I had that moment of internal wisdom, because I feel that if I hadn't have noticed that sort of movement sensation in my stomach, I think that I would have probably ended up, you know, rightly so, in a hospital or with medication to try and get back to reality. But somehow I was able to sense it and never lost it. Yeah. So that's why it's important. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Thank you for sharing that. And then I will say, as I said to you before we started recording, speaking about that movement sensation in your stomach and the way that you know that it was some wisdom and it was something that you could hold on to when you were kind of losing yourself.
Yeah.
That just, I feel that on a visceral level, and it's, you know, it's like, it feels meaningful, and it's really hard to explain what feels so meaningful about it to me. And I think that, you know, that knowing that something is landing on a visceral level, even though it's really hard to put it into words, is a part of what we're talking about, right?
That's right. Yeah. And sometimes there are no words. And there were so many words in those no words. And that's a lot of, you know, what I experience in myself as a being, but also clinically what I experience with many of my clients, is that so much can happen in that interceptive sense, or in that, you know, experiencing between, you know, client and therapist, and there are no words. There's actually a lot of words, and there's a lot of information happening below the level of consciousness, right, in that 80% I was talking about in both systems. But I don't think we have the, you know, the neuroscience apparatus, to measure right now what's happening. But I believe we'll get there, because we've got just some awesome people in this world doing the most incredible things in the labs. We'll get there.
And just because you can't measure it yet doesn't mean that it's not happening. So, yeah, I mean, I think that it's something to think about, just like, for what it's worth. We were talking about a felt sense, and we're talking about using language and talking to access the felt sense as well, and psychoeducation. And, you know, so we're talking about top down, we're talking about bottom up. But as therapists and people who work with clients, it can be really useful to just go slower. And when there's a pause, to not just fill the space and feel into what's happening. And yeah, that's all coming up for me as we're talking. But whenever I'm around you, I always feel like that.
But you're so right, right? You're so right, because, you know, perhaps to expand some of, Professor Dan Siegel's work, Professor Alan Shore, Louis Cozzolino, who developed interpersonal neurobiology, you know, that interpersonal, then the neurobiological, you know, physical aspect. There is a whole, you know, and as this sort of develops as a theory and, you know, research later, there's a whole unspoken kind of information set happening below the level of consciousness. You know, Alan Shore talks about in terms of that right brain to right brain communication. There's huge amounts of research. I can't, you know, name everyone. And I'm always reminded of, you know, the late Colin Trevelyan. He was a professor of psychology at University of Edinburgh. You know, he did a lot of work on kind of mother-baby kind of language and kind of like the dance, with sometimes vocalization, but sometimes not vocalization. Right. So what I took from that work, and this may or may not be accurate, but is that there's a lot of data between caregiver attachment, you know, parents or non-parents, depending on the upbringing, with the developing person. And also, as we kind of fast forward into the here and now, that when we're sitting with clinicians, there's all that's happening without words. There's words and there's not words. And those are kind of like data sets that we can't quite, it's kind of like the epigenome right now. You know, we know in kind of transgenerational trauma that, you know, Professor Rachel Yehuda's work, there's a link between, you know, if we just look to Holocaust survivors, you know, the grandparents in the Holocaust, then there's a, then the parents don't have any symptoms. And then, you know, PTSD, you might see a child or children with PTSD symptoms, even though there's been sort of no immediate trauma in their lifetime. But how do we kind of know? She's sort of proving that. And it's similar with this kind of the unspoken, that we, how we sit and how we are with ourselves and also our clients, that one day, hopefully we'll be able to measure and kind of expand that interpersonal neurobiology lens. You know, just coming back, I think that we can put words to interception, and that interception also has no words. I mean, obviously it has no words, but I think that there is another language here that we miss and that we can't measure just yet. And that has a lot of impact. Certainly when I'm working with people, I know, because they change and not a lot has been said. Some things have been said, but there is a different something that happens at a very kind of core level.
Very exciting. Very exciting to see what will develop. And it's developing right now. So you're in the process of creating this training, but you have some stuff that's already available now on your website, right? Can you talk a little bit about what people can find and then give us the website link too? So, you know, I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, sure. So we've got several one-day trainings coming up. We've got Abby Blakesley on the power of interception and trauma coming up on the 29th of May. I've got a interception and the neurobiology of complex trauma recovery on the 19th of June. We've got consultation coming up of my guest speaker or my guest partner in consultation is Dr. Kate Truitt coming up in September, October, November. I'm just trying to organize something for July. I think that's going to be an interception and ASD, ADHD, so neurodivergence. So we'll have like a one-day training every month. It'll either be 6 hours or 3 hours. You can come, you can access it for free. If you want the CEs, you can upsell and pay for that. We've also got another summit coming up on the 2nd and 3rd of October. So that is, if I can remember, that's interception and neuroscience in clinical practice. So again, a little bit more of that kind of brain science, neuroscience lens behind the clinical application in therapy. And then hopefully by then we will have at least the first draft or first couple of trainings of our new curriculum, which we are just sort of putting together as a, you know, as a framework, as an interception-informed research-backed framework.
Amazing. Are you saying that these monthly 3 to 6 hour trainings are free?
Yeah. So
want CEs, they can pay?
Yeah, it's free on the day. And if you want the recording and to get the CEs, you can sign up for them. And, you know,
fabulous.
We use Thinkific behind sort of our tech stack. So you can have an account and access all your recordings, have a lifetime access and have your APA or your NBCC or your ASW, forget the social work acronym.
That's what I was listening for.
Yeah, there you go.
What? Fabulous. And then the website is
interceptioninternational.com.
Beautiful. I'll be sure to link to that in the show notes. Tracy, I'm so excited for you and honored that you shared some of your time. It's very late at night for you. So thank you for being with us here on Therapy Chat today and for everything that you're doing in the world. It's amazing. And I'm so proud to call you my friend and have you as my guest here on Therapy Chat.
Thank you so much, Laura. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And you know what? I'm also really excited for what you're doing in the world, bringing people together in the way that you do, putting out content and asking like super important and pertinent questions which impact our field and get people thinking in the right ways around what we're trying to do in this therapeutic space. And you know, I'm always you know, have this sort of quote at the back of my head. I think sort of James Hillman said, you know, we've had 100 years of psychotherapy and the world hasn't changed. Now, for me, you know, that's a statement. And in some ways it's true because I think it's really important, like you're doing, we need to start asking the right questions and myself included doing the work that if we're going to be practicing a psychotherapy, that the world changes because we're in a shit place right now. And, you know, it's the same thing, us as a human race, of where we are. We've been here before. It's not the first time the world has been here. But I think the question to ask, you know, what is it that we're doing within psychotherapy and mental health is a good one because we're a microcosm for the wider world. And I really
have so much ability to impact change.
Yeah.
I agree with you 100%. Thank you for saying that. And and thank you for the kind words that you said about me as well. And I'm grateful for what we can do. Try to get people thinking, try to keep opening our perspective about things.
Therapy Notes is the highest rated EHR, practice management, and billing software for mental health professionals. Its all-in-one platform is designed to streamline all aspects of your practice, from connecting with clients via secure messages to scheduling, notes, billing, and more. You can trust Therapy Notes has you covered. And one of the best parts? 24/7 customer service with a live person. It's beyond easy to get help over the phone or by email at any time of day from their knowledgeable and friendly representatives. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
Therapists ready to stop just listening and start doing? I offer several ways to work with me and accelerate your trauma expertise. You can join my Trauma Therapist Network membership community for ongoing support, book a one-on-one clinical consultation with me for personalized guidance, or buy my course for clinicians on supporting survivors of sexual trauma, and check out the retreats coming up in 2026. All that info and more is on the For Therapists page of Trauma Therapist Network, and you can find a link in the show notes.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Regan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.